I'm Thorne Dreyer, and this is Rag Radio. Rag Radio originates in the studios of KOOP 91.7 FM in Austin, Texas, a cooperatively run all-volunteer community radio station. We're rebroadcast on several other stations around the country. Our podcasts go out all over the place, so we have an audience that's we have some reach, and our shows have some legs. So, and the reach is from the arms, and the legs is for the movement. I don't know. Anyway, Tracy Schultz, my engineer and co-conspirator, is not here today. Instead, we're joined by the inimitable, indefatigable Alan Campbell. Alan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Happy to be here live in the studio with you guys.
I have to say that at this station, I originally apprenticed with Alan Campbell. So I have to think of him as the old man, even though I'm older than he is.
Well, you were on KPFT back when I was in elementary school. So it's like it's a little bit of a Chinatown situation. It's like who mentors whom and stuff like that. You know, my father, my son, my mother, my daughter, my sister.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We got a good show coming up today. And Greg Barrios is with us in the studio. And Greg is an old friend and old colleague dating back to the mid-60s, I guess we would say. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
And on the phone with us is Carmen Tafaya, who is the 2015 Poet Laureate of Texas. Carmen, hi. Welcome to Rag Radio.
Glad to be with you.
Okay, let me give people a little background. Texas Poet Laureate and Carmen Tafaya and poet, critic, playwright.
Tafaya,
what did I say?
Tafaya.
Oh, okay. I hadn't even gotten that far into it that I didn't mess up. And Greg Barrios. Carmen is a San Antonio native, is a 2015 Poet Laureate of Texas, a poet, storyteller, performance artist, motivational speaker, and university professor known throughout the world for her moving performances and readings. Dr. Tafaya will be honored at the 2015 Texas Book Festival, which is this Saturday and Sunday, if you're listening to us live, October 17th through 18th in Austin, and will be part of the new Ahora Si program tent that will feature Latina writers and related events. Author of more than 20 books and the recipient of numerous literary awards, Tafaya was called by Rigoberto Gonzalez the Zora Neale Hurston of the Chicano community, and by Alex Haley, a world-class writer, and was recognized by the National Association of Chicana and Chicano Studies for work which gives voice to the peoples and cultures of this land. Greg Barrios, a San Antonio-based poet, playwright, filmmaker, and critic, and you could go on and on with that. I mean, very, very few media that he hasn't touched on and mastered, actually. He's a former book editor of the San Antonio Express News, and he will moderate a panel, The Many Faces of Texas Poetry, at this weekend's Texas Book Festival. Barrios, who serves on the board of directors of the National Book Critics Circle, was elected to the prestigious Texas Institute of Letters earlier this year. Greg was a 2013 USC Annenberg Getty Fellow and has been awarded a CTG Mark Taper Fellowship, a Ford Foundation grant, and a 2013 Artist Foundation grant for his theater work. A Chicano activist in the 60s, Greg Barrios was an original contributor to Austin's underground newspaper, The Rag, and has been our guest on Rag Radio three times previously. I should also mention that Greg Barrios was the editor of La Raza, which was the newspaper of La Raza Unida part of the
It was called La Verdad.
La Verdad?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I remembered it as being called La Raza, but never mind. Okay. Both of you, thank you for being with me. I think we should have a very interesting show. We're going to have some poetry readings on the show. The first thing I want to do is to talk a little bit about the Texas Book Festival and the issue of diversity. In an op-ed in the Texas Observer in 2013, Greg Barrios, and it was published in the LA Times?
The Los Angeles Times.
Los Angeles Times. He wrote, "Over the past few years, I've been losing my faith in the I should mention the Texas Book Festival is a really pretty big deal in Texas. It's in the Capitol building and around the Capitol building in Austin, and hundreds of writers participate and tens of thousands of people attend. So he says, I've been losing my faith in the Texas Book Festival as a vehicle for bringing Tejanos and Texans together for a culturally inclusive literary experience. The festival's definition of Texas authors then and now meant mostly white writers. This year's 2013 lineup features only 15 Latina and Latino writers out of 230 invited writers. And this was in 2013. If books can bridge cultural divides, and they can, then let this spirit be reflected in the way the festival provides access and representation for all Texans. Okay, then, this week, actually, in the Austin American Statesman, Samantha Badgen, I believe, wrote, more than 300 authors of all genres are coming to Austin October 17th and 18th for the 20th annual Texas Book Festival, which last year drew more than 40,000 people to the Capitol grounds. 16%, about 6,400 of these people were Latino, according to a survey conducted by the festival's organizers, who are looking to increase that number and the diversity in its lineup and audience members. Lois Kim, the executive director of the festival, said, we're responding to feedback from the community. Latinos make up an important and large part of the population. It seems like a very natural thing to try to have something that would be appealing to them. I should also think that it would be a natural thing to have to recognize the artistry of Latino and Latina writers, not just to appeal to them with it. But it's interesting, this change has happened, and I think that and there has been a lot of community input, and I think a lot of it started with your op-ed, Greg.
Thank you, Thorne. I believe it had an integral part in the changes. I think the most important aspect of that is the fact that after I wrote that op-ed, the then new Texas Book Festival director, Steph Ofitz, wrote a letter in response immediately telling readers and myself that she had just come on board and that there was no excuse for them not having a better presence for Latinos and people of color. And since then, I've seen great strides under her tutelage for bringing more Latino writers. One of the other things that I was very disheartened by at the time was the fact that poetry had been eliminated completely from the festival, as well as most small press books, mainly from Texas. I'm glad to say that poetry has been reinstated. There's a large number of poets. In fact, I'm moderating a panel this tomorrow on the many faces of Texas poetry, which is, you know, exactly what I've been hollering about. So the thing about this is that there are also small presses that these writers come from, Arte Público Press, Wings Press, and many others that have been, you know, providing Texas writers with an outlet for their creative endeavors. And so it's good that we are finally moving forward in that direction. And I think the Texas Book Festival should be recommended for picking up the gauntlet and the challenge.
Yeah, it's very significant. I think it's a very significant development. Carmen, I would like to bring you in. One of the things that Greg had written to me when we were talking about what to do on the show, he said, perhaps the hour could be a showcase for how Chicano poets and poetry are at long last being recognized by the mainstream and academia. Do you feel that that's what's happening?
Yes, I think so. And I'm really grateful to Greg for having the courage to tell it like it is on the op-ed piece, because traditionally, the Texas art scene, and especially the Texas literary scene, has had a kind of a go-to comfortable spot in turning to the quote-unquote real writers, you know, and also bowing to the god of East Coast, West Coast style, and kind of ignoring what we have right here. We are the mera mata, as we say in Spanish. We're the root of it all. We're the center. We're the navel of the universe, you know. We, in Texas, and in Central Texas, in our bicultural reality, are really the wave of the future, where the way the state's going to go, where the way the nation's going to go, where the way the world's going to go. We will no longer be able to have a comfortable, superior race position, I think, anywhere in the world, because we are a mixture. And those cultures are mobile, and they're moving, and they are coming into contact, and we're discovering wonderful things that come from totally different ethnic backgrounds. So I do think that specifically where it comes to the Latino experience, we're at a little bit of a breakthrough point. We're not there yet, but we have started to crumble through that wall. And that wall for many, many years kept us out. And I'm not talking about the wall at the border, although that one kept a lot of people out.
That's another whole story. We could have a discussion about that, too. But, you know, I would like to add to your to what you're saying to say that, and we are all so much richer for it, you know, for this development, for this multiculturalism, mm-hmm. for the advent of the literature of the Latino, Latina people, of the mm-hmm. indigenous people of all colors and approaches and yeah. you know.
It's a wonderful, the Latino experience is a wonderful departure for understanding how culture and race works. Punto. Period. I used to teach a class at Trinity University called The Mestizo in Everyone. And students were really grabbed by that because even the person from the most purebred ethnic background is a mixture of their mother's family and their father's family.
Right.
And they come from two different places. And that's what gives us that dynamic, ongoing change. A culture that stands still, if there is such a thing, which I don't think there is, dies. Cultures are ever-changing and moving. We're not static. We're dynamic. And I think the Latino experience is a great, great model, because if you try and racially track us backward, even on the supposedly Spanish side of our heritage, which is only a small part of our full heritage as Chicanos in the Southwest, the Spanish side is a mixture of the Arab and the Jew. It's a mixture of the Goth and the Celt, the Italian, the Gypsy, who comes from Indian India. So you mix that with the many indigenous cultures of this continent, and we're related to the world.
Yeah. And Greg is just nodding and beaming over here. So for those of you who don't have your video on, we're just radio, aren't we, Greg?
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. And I think that it's wonderful to hear that from you. And I think that the other thing we need to hear from you, and I don't want to go any longer into the show without you reading something for us. Would you honor us, please?
I love to mix languages. I love to mix cultural experiences. I think it's the best way to live life. It's the most interesting. And it's hard for me not to do that even in my writing, which for a long while kept me out of certain publications. I do write poems that are all in English, and I do write poems that are all in Spanish, but my native language is Tex-Mex, so that's what comes out. A little bit of English, a little bit of Spanish, and I think fully understandable to your audience. So I'm going to read something for you called The Story Keeper, because I think it represents part of our struggle as Chicanos and Latinos to be seen in a country where we're so often invisible. Our history is not written into the textbooks. We walk right through the middle of a U.S. history textbook and disappear. So this is called The Story Keeper, Instructions from an Historian. In the jarros, she says, look in the jarros, the ones forgotten or shoved aside with a broken clay lip and color dulled by years of hard use and unmeditated abuse. Search between the folds of rags, the places no one else would look. Often they are there, hiding our stories. Look in the garage, in the dark corners. Sometimes they are undiscovered, silent, in the tecurucho sheds out back, or dumped in the alley, wiped away from our lives for the trash to take. others hoarded like treasures the holder fears to reveal, wrapped in a homemade colcha, in a wooden box, under the bed. In the viejito's eyes, in the twilight of death, you read their secret. The eyes point you to the spot, stamp remember on the almost forgotten box, and plead with you to be the keeper of the story. To open the box, unwrap the colcha carefully, save the scrawled story, protect it as best you can. Look in the places where ink does not show. In the breaking voice between the lines of a song, our history is written in that song, written on the voice, sometimes written on the heart. Look at the hands, the way the woman crosses herself when she passes a certain field. Everyone knows the story of what happened there late that night, 90 years ago. Everyone knows, but it is not written. The paragraphs of dangling bodies were too long, too ugly to be written. The sentences, like unfinished lives, too short to make sense. The letters of the words spelled out, distorted, incomprehensible, like mutilation of body parts that started out in belleza and truth. Look at the way she holds the masa with both hands, protecting, feeling its warmth, memorizing the moment for just a second before it's split apart into many tortillas, each to go their own way, some consumed rapidly, some wasted, some disappeared, never to be seen again. In her gestures, her hesitations, her sigh of mourning, lie our history. As the whispers, she whispers, breathed out in unguarded moments when the soul is too tired to think, the body too worn down to hurt more, in the numbness of the night, when the father wrestles with the unwritten history, pleading to save it, speak it, bury it, staring at the pluma across the room, avoiding the paper, singing the Indian chant of a story he will not tell his children yet. They are too young, only 10, or 16, or 36. Wait, wait, I fear for them to know what those hate-filled others did to my grandfather. They are too young. Perhaps I too at only 60 am too young to know, too old to forget. As the whispers, she chants, learn the chant, sing it slow and privately like he, a sacred song to be sung at only sacred moments. Look in the footwells of our steps, the table corners rubbed smooth, the marks on the walls where we have lived, the fine and tired stitches in the clothing sewed and mended, the careful fold of the shuck on the tamal, the thumbprint curves of crepe paper flowers trying to make canta out of llores. Learn to read the hands, the eyes, the spine. You must be like a detective or a spy, subtle, unnoticed, unrelenting, for they are out there, our stories, to be read at the tracks of tears now made into wrinkles on the face, in the scars we carry with pride, in the grocery list marked with crayon, on a junk mail funeral home advertisement, in the Western Union telegrams of money sent home to Mexico, in the eviction notices sent people whose address has stayed the same for 150 years. You must be persistent, courageous, go quickly, urgently, go into the dark corners, unveil our treasures from the attic, go find it, hear it, touch it, write it down. This is how we keep our history. This is how we also keep our soul.
Mm. Texas Poet Laureate Carmen Tafoyo. Well, we'll be back with Carmen and Greg Barrios on Rag Radio after this.
Every time.
And we say hello here on Rag Radio. I'm Thorne Dreyer, and my guests are Texas Poet Laureate Carmen Tafoya and poet, critic, playwright, and old friend Greg Barrios. And so we're, and I want to tell both of you that whatever we're talking about, if at any point you have something you want to just, we're very loose here. And so always just pop in, please. You still there with us, Carmen?
Yes, cool. I sure am.
Excellent. Okay. Greg, maybe this is a good time for us to talk about Juan Felipe Herrera. And as long as we're talking about poet laureates, and I should mention also that Carmen was poet laureate of San Antonio before she was poet laureate of the state of Texas. And what's next, Carmen, after this? I mean, you know, it's so very cool. And that, why don't you tell us, why don't both of you tell us a little bit about Juan Felipe Herrera? And I think we have something queued up that Greg is going to, that we're going to play.
Yeah, I think Juan Felipe has been at the forefront of Latino poetry. He was at the first Floricanto that was held at USC back in the 70s when a group of Latino, mainly Chicano writers, got together and we showed what we were doing. Many of them are no longer with us. The Austin poet Raul Salinas was there. Yeah. The San Antonio El Paso poet Ricardo Sanchez. The Brown Buffalo was there. Oscar Zeta Acosta. And there were just many people who were no longer there, but they presented a new idea, a new voice, if you will, of poetry told in the language that we speak. Some of us in Spanish, some of us in English, some of us in what Carmen called Tex-Mex, Calo, yeah. You know, if you will.
Yeah.
And so this was very important. It gave us a stamp, so to speak. At about the same time, you know, in San Antonio, we had a literary magazine, and it was called Caracol. And that was my first opportunity to publish my poetry in that magazine. Cecilio Camarillo was the editor of it. And I believe, Carmen, you were in, you, that was the first time you were published,
yes,
as well?
Yes, that was my first, I had been published in a college, a small college literary newspaper for a couple of poems. But the first, you know, out-of-college thing was actually Caracol. And I remember Juan Felipe Herrera from the second Floricanto, the second National Chicano Literary Festival, which was in Austin. And I recall having seen the announcement for the first in California and thinking, oh, that's halfway across the world, you know, I can't make it out there. And when the second one showed up in Austin, there was an incredible excitement that popped up from a lot of people that said, hey, we can make it, we can drive, we can hitch a ride, we can do something, but we have to get there. And it was also the first place I read my work publicly. And you have to understand, this was 1975. It was the middle of the Chicano movement. There was a sense of magic, of newness, of discovery, of empowerment. We were a people whose language had been denied us. Children were punished in school for slipping up and saying, ay Dios mío, or I got to go to the bathroom, or anything that they said that was in something other than English was punishable by law and punishable by school policy, you know, paddling, making the child kneel and ask forgiveness, taking their lunch money away, all kinds of very, very belittling behaviors. And so here we were all of a sudden not just empowering ourselves to publish our own works. Okay, so a publishing company doesn't want us. Great. The editor of Caracol, Cecilio, said, I'll buy a printing press, and I'll put it in my kitchen, and we'll publish books from there. And he did. So there was that self-empowerment, which was so crucial to the whole definition of what Chicano was about. It was we're not accepting somebody else's definition for us or somebody else's limitations for us. We're doing it ourselves. And so not only did Cecilio advertise this great possibility of having literature that expressed two cultures and two languages and masterpieces created between those two languages, but he also sponsored, and I don't know if you remember this, Greg, but the trilingual poetry contest using English, Spanish, and Nahuatl. And the Nahuatl, of course, being the language of the Aztecs, he provided us 20 words in Nahuatl that would get us started anyway on understanding some Nahuatl terms.
A starter kit.
You know, Nahuatl terms end like the word Nahuatl does. It has a TL at the ending, which was really hell on Spanish speakers to pronounce, and even harder on anybody else to pronounce was an English speaker, you know. And so I remember who the winner was at that first contest. Everybody entered, of course. We were all so excited.
Yes.
But the winner was Juan Felipe Herrera, who turned in this wonderful trilingual poem, and he did exactly in the trilingual poem what we were already doing in Tex-Mex, the English-Spanish mixture. He didn't just jumble the words up. He used Spanish forms on English words and English forms on Spanish words that we'd been doing for a long while, like taking the word park and making it parquear, or the word flunk and making it flunquear. He did that also to the Nahuatl Aztec words. And I'll never forget one of the lines in there said, que locorl. So que loco.
Yeah.
Turned into an Aztec term.
Right.
There was an excitement. It was a wonderful time period.
Okay, Greg, you're going to take us to him right now, too, aren't you?
Yes. We're going to hear a poem by him, and then he's going to give us a slight discourse of about a minute and a half in which he'll explain why he wrote the poem, and it's rather clever and funny. I hope you enjoy it.
My name is Juan Felipe Herrera. This poem is called Five Directions to My House. 1. Go back to the grain yellow hills where the broken speak of elegance. 2. Walk up to the canvas door, the short bed stretched against the clouds. 3. Beneath the earth, an ant writes with the grace of a governor. 4. Blow, blow, red-tailed hawk, your hidden sleeve, your desert secrets. 5. You are almost there, without a name, without a body. Go now. 6. I said 5. Said 5. Like a guitar says 6. You know, I used to play the guitar when I was 16, and I got into the folk song movement and harmonica strapped around my neck, and then I used to play it like Bob Dylan when he first was coming out. And so the guitar is kind of inside this poem somewhere. And red-tailed hawks, I just love birds of that size, and they're so majestic, and little birds too. And that's about it. You know, I just started writing, and I started with the title, Five Directions to My House, and then I used numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it begins, go back to the green yellow hills. So then I went back and let the poem go, and then I finished it up with something about that guitar. And I was happy because it has 6 lines, and yet there's 5 directions. So I like having a little puzzle in there, and to let you figure it out, and to let me figure it out too. And that's the idea behind poetry. I have to figure it out, and maybe the reader has to figure it out too. And maybe between both of us, the poem can really, really take off. And maybe we didn't figure it out, but we gave the poem a little time of our lives.
Yeah. Terrific.
That's great.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Greg, what? I hope that we're going to have time before we take a break for you to read something too, and this might be a good time to do that. I'm interested. Also, I want to talk about some of the other things you're doing. I want to talk about the new play that you're premiering, and I also want to talk about you're covering the Golden Globe Awards. It's going to be fun.
Well, thank you. But, I was hoping we could do two in one, and I wanted to read you the opening dialogue from the new play.
Maybe we'll do it after we go to break.
Sure.
And maybe we'll go ahead. Alan, are we set up? Can we go ahead and go to break now so that we have timed a slightly longer stretch for our final segment?
I don't see why not.
You think that's possible? After all, we're in control. I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is RAG Radio. My guests are Greg Barrios and Carmen Tafoya. We'll be right back. You're back with RAG Radio. I'm Thorne Dreyer. Thank you, Alan Campbell, for working with us today, being my engineer. We're my guest today, and it's sort of a Texas Book Festival special. San Antonio native Carmen Tafoya is the 2015 Poet Laureate of Texas, a poet, storyteller, performance artist, and university professor. And Dr. Tafoya will be part of the new Ahora Si program tent at the that will feature Latino and Latina writers at the Texas Book Festival. Greg Barrios, a San Antonio-based poet, playwright, filmmaker, and critic, will moderate a panel, The Many Faces of Texas Poetry, at the Texas Book Festival. Greg, you are going to read something for us. You want? And I'm interested in your new. Is this the Ship of Fools that you're going to?
Yes.
Your new play that premieres in San Antonio in November. Is that right? About Catherine Ann Porter.
Yes, it's about probably Texas' most famous writer. Although for the longest time, the good old boy system kept insisting it was J. Frank Dobie.
J. Frank Dobie, right.
But I think she made it quite clear that the man had taken the novel away from women writers, you know. Uh-huh. It's just like when Abraham Lincoln met the writer of that famous book that, in a sense... Uncle Tom's Cabin, Harriet Beecher Stowe. And he told her, you're the little lady who started this whole thing. And so I think it's important that, you know, Catherine Ann Porter, you know, who I found out at one point came from my hometown of Victoria and also attended Our Lady of the Lake University, where I'm presently... the visiting writer for this fall semester. And so I was just amazed at, you know, the similarities in our background from the fact that she wrote for the Victoria Advocate and later for El Sol de Mexico. She was bilingual. And many of her stories take place in Mexico. But at the same time, there's been this feeling that they had... in some way taken a lot of our culture and filtered it through their own. So this story, this play, is about a Mexican-American biographer that comes to tell her story, so to speak, but there he has an ulterior motive. And so I'd like to just read the first scene, which takes place in a old hotel in Mexico City in 1960. And the young man is waiting for Miss Porter to appear, and he speaks. His name is Cristobal. Waiting takes a lifetime. That's what I'll think after she and I are dead and buried. I've been waiting 30 minutes, and she's still not here. Imagine a gringa holding me up. When I heard the great American writer Catherine Ann Porter was in Mexico City, I couldn't wait to interview her, to pin down this elusive butterfly. Never heard of her? Well, you're not alone. She gained her literary reputation in the 1930s and 40s. She's published little since, but now she's finished a novel. Well, almost finished one, 20 years after she was supposed to deliver it. So why do I want to interview this eccentric, washed-up writer? As a journalist, I want to explore her fascination with my people, my country. What makes Mexico so simpatico and compelling to this grand dame? And if I plan this right, I might sell her my story to the Atlantic Monthly. Closer to home, although she's probably forgotten it, she and I have unfinished business. She broke the heart of the most important person in my life. When the end came, he left this earth with her name on his dying lips. I was only 9, but his last words are engraved in my memory. Caterina, no me dejes, te amo. When I asked my mother who Caterina was, she said it was Catherine Porter McFadden. Believe me, I've waited a lifetime for this day. What a better place for this interview than the Hotel del Prado, better than that god-awful Maria Isabel Hilton, where the turistas say, that mural in the wall, Rivera deserves better. It should be in a museum, not in this faded, forgotten hotel.
A Ship of Fools.
Wonderful.
An alibiography.
An alibiography. Tell us what you mean by that.
Wow. Well, you know, with all of with everyone using a fine-tooth comb with all these memoirs that are coming out, and then, you know, Oprah having to take back the fact that she suggested a book or recommended a book that had false information or right. exaggerated information.
Right, right.
And it's just gone on since then to the nth degree. So I decided that right at the onset, we'll call it an alibiography.
I love it. I love it. It's you've. I mean, and I know you're going to also read going to read something else too, right? Your playwriting is remarkable, and the range of stuff that you've covered, and you've dug into some pretty interesting, you know, stories, some interesting material. And how you've done. You know, when I think about it, you know, of course we knew each other in the mid '60s, and I think, boy. And when I had Ed Sanders on recently, Ed Sanders of the Fugs, who's like an incredible man of letters, a big,
yes.
big man of letters, you know, I think, boy, you know, how prolific you folks are. And it makes me feel, you know,
well,
like,
you know,
like at least some of us did.
It comes with
some
territory.
Some of us did well in this world.
Somebody's got to do it. Let's just say that.
Yeah, but you've done so much great stuff.
Thank you.
And it's honored to have both of you on this show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with Co-op Radio.
It's very cool. So before you read again, why don't you tell us about the Golden Globes? I love. Greg sent me this picture, and it's this wonderful picture. He said to George Clooney, I don't remember how you put it, but
eat your heart out, George Clooney,
because it has Greg standing there with the Golden Globes. Globe.
Yeah, on the red carpet. Insignia,
on the red carpet.
Yeah, in my tuxedo. And
looking
and,
like an elegant movie star.
Yeah, well.
Not that, you know, not that that's such a stretch. I mean,
no,
he is an elegant.
You know I'll tell you a funny story. One of the people at the foreign press who sponsors the Golden Globes came up to me and said, "Hey, your tuxedo looks a lot better than George Clooney. And you look better than he does, and he's got more makeup than Madonna." So, you know, I felt good about that. Yeah. I was able to attend the Golden Globes this year because I had, in the past, when I lived in Los Angeles, I was a reporter for the LA Times, and I covered a lot of the entertainment, especially, you know, the Latino entertainment. So when this opportunity arose, you know, to how would you like to come back and cover the Globes again, I turned to a Mexico City magazine, Encuentro, and they said, "We'd love to have you do this because the director Alejandro Iñárritu, who directed Keaton.
Oh, Michael Keaton.
Yeah,
he did win the Oscar.
I'm not sure.
Oh, he didn't, but the film did. The movie.
Yeah. And Iñárritu got Best Director.
Right.
Well, the character they refer to in the movie is Birdman.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
It's good to have Alan Campbell here because he still has a brain.
Keep us on track.
Yeah, really.
I was able to do an interview with him and also with Gina Rodriguez, who's the star of Jane the Virgin, which is on the CW network. And it's about a young Latina. And we were able to have a conversation at the Globes in Spanish, which I thought was amazing, you know. I think it's just shows that Latinos are moving up in the industry. And it's about time is what I say.
Right.
I need to kind of interject the irony of us not fully being able to remember the title of that Michael Keaton movie.
You mean about being bird-brained?
Well, you see, the full title, and you may or may not get a kick out of this, the full title, and that's what I was trying to recall, was Birdman or the Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance.
Touché,
really.
Okay. So that's how I was there, you know, and I really had a great time, and you know, I'm hoping to go again this coming year.
Okay. You're going to read something else for us, and then I would like for Carmen to tell us a little about her experience as poet laureate, or her poet laureate experiences. So read for us, would you?
Okay. I'm going to explain just a little bit about it. I've completed a new volume of a collection of poetry, which is quite different for me. It's called Catholic Discipline, and it deals with my going through Catholic education from year one through year 12.
Right.
And what I've taken is biblical stories that deal with theology, etc., and have mashed them up with pop culture. And this one is called Procol Harum, a wider shale of pale version. And as I read it, you'll understand why and so forth. A wider shade of pale version. And so it was related, as the angel told his tale. Mary had been concentrating on her embroidery too long. And just as she had put her task down, the hunky archangel with his sweaty, haloed brow appeared. "My name is Gabriel," he announced too sweetly. At first she feared he was threatening. That made her uptight. But no, he was more tense than she, silently saying her daily grace. Mary put on a brave face. "A wedding or a funeral, Mary?" her mother would ask. And as the Virgin told her tale, her face had burst just ghostly, turned a whiter shade of pale. Part 2. Joseph, sprung from the seed of Jesse, was born repressed. Now, upon hearing his beloved was PG, he was depressed. "It's our family honor, such shame," his mother would taunt. There was a seed between he and Mary. He had to cross it. Maybe then the gloom would leave this nervous groom. The angel kept toying with his faded armor-plated breast, waiting. His radiant face showed no sign of compromise. "Oh, well, let it be," Joseph said impatiently. He said, "There is no reason. The truth is plain to see. Wouldn't let her be a Vestal Virgin of 16 who was leaving with Angel for the coast." Part 3. Their cheeky cherub sits, a cheek epiphany, as the famous family entertains Los Three. Through the shining star above the stable, made the shepherds and others suspect the wise men had correctly calculated Halley's Comet was due this new year. Now all fears have turned to cheer. Nevertheless, will this family receive the same respect in Arab Spring next year? Baby skipped the light fandango, did cartwheels for encore. I was feeling kind of sick as the Magi called out for more. It was past baby's bedtime and my migraine was humming harder as a spirit flew away. And when they called out for another, they had gone away. So it was related, as Joseph told his tale, that her face had burst just ghostly, turned a whiter shade of pale.
Greg Barrios, A Whiter Shade of Pale. Another take on A Whiter Shade of Pale. We have about 4 minutes. Carmen, is there something that you can still read for us in that time?
Sure, I sure can.
So let's just
this one's
hear.
Called Dancing with Death Again. I don't know if you know, when I was City Poet Laureate, about a month after I went into it, I was diagnosed with cancer. So it was a very interesting and intense period of doing poetry and chemo and surgery and all kinds of alternative things at the same time. And then now that I'm State Poet Laureate, I'm fine. But my husband's in a terminal situation. So it seems like this whole issue that we deal with all the way through life, dealing with death, dancing with death again. Okay. There you are again. Even though I don't give you my address or phone number, you follow me closer than the Church of Scientology follows its mailing list victims, always waiting for a blank spot on my dance card. But I have too many suitors, life and bills, family responsibilities, islands I haven't visited, tribes whose languages and dances I have not yet learned. Writing, always, to the last moment my brain cells can turn. Writing, for it is a dawn-colored creation, like birth, like life. Don't get me wrong, Death. I have great respect for you. I could even say I have a certain human love for you. Someday, my dear, someday we will begin our romance, but not now. When I only dance with you once an evening, and briefly, in the spare dance on my dance card.
Oh, Death. Wonderful. Texas Poet Laureate Carmen Tafoyo. What's it like to be a poet laureate? What has your experience been as the state's premier poet?
It's been almost like channeling, almost like being some kind of a crystal ball person trying to, I think, capture the voices of the people around me and empower them and empower poetry for others. It's an honor. It's a blessing. It's also a very humbling task to try and impact a community, whether it's a city or a state.
What are some of the things you do in
that role?
Well,
right now I'm working on a project called Planting Poet Trees, and for those who are on Facebook, they can look on Tafoya Poet Trees. Mm-hmm. And it describes a program to go to 20 of the poorest school districts in the state and take writing workshops in and get the kids to submit their work for publication and get books on creative writing for their libraries. That's one of the things I did. As City Poet Laureate, I was involved in a lot of local genre mixing creations, like narrations for music or writing a Japanese Kyogen-style interlude for an event that would feature Japanese no theater, but have the San Antonio River in the middle of the Japanese Sumida River and Benjamin Prince Curlew River. So it's a lot of different, I loved it. It allows you to run the full gamut of everywhere creativity can go. And I don't think we can ever lose with that. I think it becomes a mestizo experience between the arts.
Do you have a specific mission? We have about 15 seconds you have left.
To reach those people who would not have been reached before by poetry.
Great. What an honorable task. So, all right. Thank you both for being with me on Rag Radio today.
Thank you,
Carmen Tafoya, who's the 2015 Poet Laureate of Texas, and Greg Barrios, poet, playwright, filmmaker, critic, who was elected to the prestigious Texas Institute of Letters earlier this year. So thank you both.
I'm here with Larry McMurtry now.
Huh?
I'm in there with Larry McMurtry.
In there with Larry McMurtry. So, did you have to say, Larry, move over? Elbow there. So, okay. Thank you both.
Thank you.
I'm Thorne Dreyer. This is Rag Radio. I want to thank Alan Campbell again, Roger Baker, who's been here taking pictures, and the whole Rag Radio crew. We'll catch you next week.